Well, hi, everybody, and welcome again to our Letters on Occult Meditation video programming. It's been a little while since I've been able to get back to this. I wish I could do it every day. Maybe under proper self-pressure, I could. But for the moment, I'm doing what I can do. We're studying the dangers that can beset a person through the unwise use of meditation. The dangers that beset the student of meditation are dependent upon many factors, and it will not be possible to do more than briefly indicate certain menacing conditions, to warn against certain disastrous possibilities, and to caution the pupil against results that are to be reached by undue strain, by over excessive zeal, and by a one-pointedness that may lead to an unbalanced development. It seems the Tibetan is mincing no words in pointing out the possibly catastrophic results here. One-pointedness is a virtue in the disciple. It's very Sagittarian, and it leads to the production of the one-pointed disciple. But it should be the one-pointedness of purpose and of aim, and not that which develops one sole line of method to the exclusion of all others. These are fine points. It's easy to become the victim of a kind of spiritual ambition, which we may call by another name, but which essentially is spiritual ambition, and to pursue it in a one-pointed manner, unwisely, and produce tension instead of a point of tension, tenseness instead of a point of tension. The dangers of meditation are largely the dangers of our virtues, and therein lies much of the difficulty. They are largely the dangers of a fine mental concept that run ahead of the capacity of the lower vehicles, especially of the dense physical vehicle. We know it's right to meditate. We know that so much can be accomplished through it, but we don't assess carefully enough the condition of the physical vehicle and the fact that perhaps it is not as purified, as developed as it could be, and offers up much resistance, and therefore the burning occurs and the burning through of protective webs and so forth. Aspiration, concentration, and determination are necessary virtues, but if used without discrimination and without a sense of time in evolution, they may lead to a shattering of the physical vehicle, which will delay all progress for some one particular life. There are catastrophes along the way. I've witnessed them myself. I was, was it drugs, was it meditation, or some combination of the two? I was forced one night to spend overnight time in a student union where the students had taken over that union or that administration building, whatever it was, in the University of Minnesota. I was there for an old world purpose, which was to see the opera Tosca, or to, you know, attend it, and a great opera by Puccini. But suddenly there was no place to stay, and so I went to this place the students had taken over, and there was no problem me getting in there, because I was of that age. But I witnessed some things where obviously people had been burnt out and no longer, well, I think had definitely ruined their nervous system for the endurance of the present incarnation. And it's a shame to be the victim of one's virtues, and one must be attentive to the wise counsel of the Tibetan. "Have I made my point clear?" he says. "I seek but to bring out the absolute necessity for the occult student to have a virile common sense for one of his basic qualities, coupled with a happy sense of proportion that leads to due caution and an approximation of the necessary method to the immediate need." It does make sense what he says, doesn't it? And some people get so carried away, you know, by the possibility of the fruits of meditation that they lose that grounding in common sense. Especially, he tells us that while the fifth ray is the ray of common sense, the sixth ray is not, and we are emerging from that period, a sixth ray period. The seventh ray, I think, will bring a subduing of the excessive enthusiasm of the sixth ray, and bring a more rhythmic and natural approach to the kinds of developments which can only happen over time. "To the man, therefore, who undertakes wholeheartedly the process of occult meditation, I would say with all conciseness, know thyself, proceed slowly and with caution, study effects." It's a circumspect attitude, isn't it? "Cultivate the realization that eternity is long," really long, like forever, "and that that which is slowly built endures forever. Aim at regularity. Realize always that regularity, you know, the soul calls to us, the solar angel calls to us to meditate, and we often skip those moments of potential because we are irregular in our habits. Realize always that the true spiritual effects are to be seen in the exoteric life of service. So there will be an effect in the outer world in one's tangible service. It's not just a question of accumulating information, storing it, or striving towards the other world. You know, one can, well, one can die of one's aspiration. He tells us that certain sixth-ray types strongly on Neptune have actually longed for the heavenly world so much that they've just passed out of the body prematurely, and of course have to return, and time has been wasted. "Remember likewise that psychic phenomena are no indication of a successful following of meditation. The world will see the effects and be a better judge than the student himself. Above all," that's an important one. Very important one. Because psychism is maybe easy to come by, especially if we regress to the old Atlantean state of things. And we imagine that we're really doing something, but in fact, we're awakening old capabilities that were ours millions of years ago. Above all, the master will know, for the results on causal levels will be apparent to him long before the man himself is conscious of any progress. So there's no such thing, you know, as the infallible, fast way without caution. I mean, the Dalai Lama is said to have wept over that question, what is the fast way? Well, you know, I heard it, that it was said, there is no fast way. He is reported to have replied, and by that, I suppose he means the rushed way. The way of one-pointed ambition which reeks not of the effects. Okay, I'll just kind of make these all a little bit more obvious. Know thyself, proceed slowly and with caution, study effects. Cultivate the realization that eternity is long, even the duration of a solar system is long, the duration of a universe far longer, and even though universes come and go, given the time sensing apparatus within man due to his limitations, the duration of a universe is very long. I once tried to calculate that, of course, you know, it's a joke, but it was so many zeros after the original numbers. Something like 80 zeros? I don't know. It was a long time. And the figures are completely discrepant with what we have regarding the calculation of the physical universe produced by science. But then we're not only talking about a physical universe. Aim at regularity. Realize always that the true spiritual effects are seen in the exoteric life of service. And remember likewise that psychic phenomena are no indication of a successful following of meditation. The world will see the effects and be a better judge than the student himself. I mean, when we see a true advanced server of the human race and an exemplar, let's say a Bishop Tutu, a Dalai Lama, you know, other sages that have come from India, you know, not all, of course, but a Yogananda, a Sri Yukteswar who never left India, but was seminal in his inspiration. When we see those types of people, of course, I can't come close to naming them all, but then we know that meditation has really had its effects. Above all, the master will know, for the results on causal levels will be apparent to him long before the man is conscious of any progress, radiation, illumination, harmonious sounding, brilliance of color, those kinds of things. The master has the infallible image before him of whether we are succeeding in moving towards the ability to meditate within the causal body, which is considered by DK the effect or indicator of success. So let us now take up these points in detail. And, you know, I don't know how much time I have today, but I'll do a little at least. This is the 25th program, and our day, excuse me, is that so? Do we have both? 25th program on August 25th. Okay. So the points in detail. Dangers inherent in the personality. It takes a long time, perhaps, before we are true personalities, but the lunar lords that will comprise the integrated personality are there from the beginning, and people who meditate are not beginners generally. I mean, beginners in the attempt to live some kind of spiritual life. Because the spiritual life, as earlier conceived, deals with God transcendent and does not deal with God immanent, nor the possibility of increasing one's willed access to higher points of tension. But later that becomes a possibility. Let us therefore consider first those dangers most closely connected with the man's own personal life, and which are dependent upon his three bodies, their separate condition, and their interrelation. And that's really important, because not only the condition of the each vehicle, but how they interact with each other, oftentimes being at different stages of development. This subject, he says, is so vast that it will not be possible to do more than indicate certain results due to certain conditions. Each man presents a different problem, and each body causes a different reaction. Now think of that, you know. Think of DK assessing how to approach each of his students. And each body causes a different reaction. And each totality in his threefold nature is affected by its alignment or by its lack of alignment. So this is how the master has to consider, or what he has to consider as he's assigning meditation. And, you know, being cautious enough to make sure that his students do not go sadly astray through excessive zeal and inappropriate methods. Well, a master will never give inappropriate methods, because he will have the means of studying his student. Lesser teachers will not have such a means, and may recommend that which is inappropriate, no matter what good intentions may exist. Let us take each body separately at first, and then in their threefold totality. In this way, some specific facts may be imparted. You know, I'm so impressed by this book. Maybe it was one of the ones that I read early, but maybe, or almost certainly, before I had an appreciation of its content or could absorb what its content offered. I begin with the mental body, as it is for the student of meditation, the one that is the center of his effort, and the one that controls the two lower bodies. Remember, in this case, Virgo, with its ruler Mercury, its exoteric ruler, rules in the fivefold sequence, or is it sixfold? Virgo. Okay, now. Virgo, a most mental sign. Rules meditation. And that doesn't mean that other people don't meditate. It's just that given the sequence from Leo to Capricorn, let's say, with its possibility of initiation, Virgo rules the stage we call meditation, which often involves clear logical thinking. The true student seeks to draw his consciousness away from the physical body and away from the emotional body into the realms of thought and into the lower mind body. Now that's the beginning, and that's the Virgo stage. Contemplation under Libra is another matter. Having achieved that much, he seeks then to transcend that lower mind and to become polarized in the causal body using the antikarana, or the, let's say, antikarana first phase, as the channel of communication between the higher and lower, the physical brain being then but the quiescent receiver of that which is transmitted from the ego or higher self, and later from the spirit and triad. So we might say higher stages of the antikarana. So that tells us something about abstraction, withdrawal, even moving beyond the concrete mind, and through a certain point of tension, at last being able to focus within the causal body using the first stage of building the antikarana. When we work in the arcane school at the beginning, that's what we find ourselves directed towards. And after a while, and eventually, at least academically, we can talk about other methods of reaching higher into points of tension that involve the spiritual triad. The work to be done necessitates a working from the periphery inward and a constant centralization. Well, okay, and what is that? Let's call this this is Leonian concentration. Having achieved that centralization and focused in that stable center, with the solar plexus and the heart quiet, so it's not an emotional experience, a point within the head, one of the three major head centers, becomes the center of consciousness, the ray of a man's ego deciding which that center will be. Three major head centers. Okay. The crown, the ajna, the alta major center. Okay, this is the method of the majority. From the periphery inwards, and a consequent centralization, Leo is the sign of concentration. It gives way to Virgo, then to Libra, then to Scorpio, Sagittarius, and finally Capricorn, and we can add Aquarian universalistic and Piscean identificatory methods and realizations. So anyway, the heart is quiet. Maybe later, for whatever kind of meditation in identification, it can be activated for a certain quality or certain qualities, which we will find in Dhyana 2, page 660. So one of the three major head centers becomes the center of consciousness. And within the head, interesting, as there are said to be seven centers within the head, and then maybe the other three as completing the Kabbalistic 10. Okay, this is the method for the majority. Then, that point having been reached, a man will follow the meditation of his ray, as indicated to you in general terms earlier in the letters, maybe around page 15 and following, something like that. You know, let's call it causal body meditation. Whether it is smashing or including or accumulating or harmonizing or drilling, you know, laser-like or incendiary, six ray, Mars in one way, or magically mantric, seventh ray. In each case, the mental body becomes the center of consciousness, and then later, through practice, it becomes a point of departure for the transference of the polarization into a higher body. First the causal and later the triad. So mental meditation first, and then transference from the mental body. Okay, actually it's lower mental body into the spiritual triad. Get that transference correct. Okay. The dangers to the mental body are very real and must be guarded against. They are paramountly two and might be termed the dangers of inhibition and those due to the atrophying of the body. So, inhibition and atrophying. Well, you know how it is, people say about meditation, and wrongly so, at least in the beginning, that what is meditation? It's not what you think, they say. Well, the early part of meditation is about thinking, and if we go too soon into meditation without seed, as opposed to meditation with seed, we may skip over the contribution to meditation of the lower mental body. I think Alice Bailey was concerned that many of us, maybe I raise my hand, you know, would get so involved in study that we had not learned to meditate, somehow ignored the meditative purpose by being so involved with the study. Well, a balance has to be achieved between meditation, study, and service. Okay, so inhibition is a problem. First, a possibility in the mental body. So first, inhibition in the lower mental body. Let us take the first of the dangers due to inhibition. Some people, by their sheer strength of will, reach a point in meditation where they directly inhibit the processes of lower mind. Thinking, you know, it a bad thing to think. But what else are you going to do when you have a seed? You have to think first, and then maybe more light will pour in on your thoughts if you offer it up to a level characterized by a higher point of attention. If you picture the mental body as an ovoid, well, or a sphere or elongated, whichever, well, let's just call it an ovoid, because that's actually what I was just dealing with, was the causal body. So if you picture the mental body as an ovoid surrounding the physical body and extending much beyond it, and if you realize that through that ovoid are constantly circulating thought forms of various kinds, the content of the man's mind and the thoughts of his environing associates, so that the mental egg is colored by predominant attractions and diversified by many geometrical forms, all in a state of flux or circulation, you may get some idea of what I mean. So, what's the story? Lots of activity. That's what I think he's trying to say. Lots of activity going on in the mental body. Thoughts of oneself, one's own thoughts, thoughts from others, geometrical forms coming through various currents and so forth. When a man proceeds to quiet that mental body by inhibiting or suppressing all movement, he will arrest these thought forms within the mental ovoid. He will stop circulation and may bring about results of a serious nature. You know, apparently, responding to the thought of Patanjali, subduing the modifications of the versatile psychic nature, which includes the subtle mental body. Oh, and subduing, yes, and apparently. Okay. So it's like putting a lock on the normal circulation, and we know, you know, you really can't hold your breath forever, can you? So as you lock the circulation, you may be in for trouble. So circulation must not be locked. This inhibition has a direct effect upon the physical brain and is the cause of much of the fatigue complained of after a period of meditation. And if persisted in, it may lead to disaster. All beginners do it, more or less, and until they learn to guard against it, they will stultify their progress and retard development, and the results indeed may be more serious. All beginners do it. Well, we're told we must not think, you know, we must not become involved with our own thought forms. We must abstract from our thought forms. But maybe the way to do that is to find a higher point of tension and not worry so much about the suppression of the lower, as that will be taken care of when one is focusing within a higher point of tension. For me, you know, the idea of point of tension becomes more meaningful every year that I study these books. Maybe not such a good idea of it was part of my early assessment, but more so, I understand more now. And this will be the case, I think, with all of us. This, you know, these are subtle matters, but we have to take them seriously. It's like, you know, during this pandemic, which is raging at the moment, many people thought it was just a hoax until they get it. And these precautions, are so subtle in some ways that people can think of them as not very important because not very tangible, you know. So subtle, how can they make any difference? But eventually, they will make a difference. And, you know, whereas, for instance, we should be charged up after meditation, if we're finding constant fatigue, then we know that something is incorrectly done. Okay, well, let's see what the Tibetan says about thought elimination. What are the right methods of thought elimination? How can placidity, peacefulness of mind, be achieved without the use of the will in inhibition? When I think of placidity, I think to a certain extent of the sign Libra, a mental sign, which is active in keeping the versatile psychic nature in balance. The following suggestions may be found useful and helpful. I always, you know, I speculate about things and then the Tibetan comes along and says something quite different, but okay, you know, that's how we learn. The student, having withdrawn his consciousness onto the mental plane at some point within the brain, let him sound forth the sacred word gently 3 times. Let him picture the breath sent forth as a clarifying, expurgating force that in its progress onward sweeps away. Notice that first ray type of motion here. When you think of the Om, it may have a spiral cyclic effect, but progress onward is the first ray motion, and meditation is of the first ray generically, study of the second generically, and service of the third generically, in general. So, let him picture that breath sent forth as a clarifying, expurgating force that in its progress onward sweeps away the thought form circulating in the mental ovoid. Let him then close, at the close, realize that the mental body is free and clear. So the Om is sounded naturally from a higher point of tension. Well, this is, this is important. And we can try it, you know. We can follow this. The exercises given in the Arcane School and in the Tibetan's books, I think, sometimes take advantage of this. You know, if we are to think of our mental vehicle, of course, right now we're studying together. You know, we need activity within the mental vehicle, but let's just, for fun and edification, we do realize that the Om has a has an effect of driving out and attracting, driving out the lesser material, and attracting better material, more easily regulated, let us say. I think there are just so many little hints about how to make our meditation better, more successful, I think. So let him then raise his vibration as high as may be. How? Well, you know, imagination and what may occur to us regarding elevation. Non-involvement in the secondary. Let him raise his vibration as high as may be, and aim next at lifting it clear of the mental body into the causal, and so bring the direct action of the ego. Bring in the direct action of the ego upon his lower three vehicles. So this is the transference about which he so often speaks, into the causal body. Now I'm kind of remembering that in some of the meditations offered, we invoke the influence of the causal body without necessarily polarizing or focusing within it. He does seem to be speaking of focusing within the causal body. So let's bring this forward. Yeah. As long as he can keep his consciousness high, and as long as he holds a vibration that is that of the ego on its own plane, that's another way of saying meditating within. This is another way of saying meditating within the causal body. The mental body will be held in a state of equilibrium, Libra, and also, also Venus. So, you know, all of this, all of this is about adjusting to the point of tension by whatever means we choose to do it. Focused, immovable will, intense concentration. And rejection of secondary, of let's say lower points of tension. It will hold no lower vibration analogous to the thought forms circulating in the environment. The force of the ego will circulate throughout the mental ovoid, permitting no extraneous geometrical units to find entrance, as if all thought forms have their own geometry, which I think they do. And the dangers of inhibition will be offset. Even more will be done. The mental matter will, in time, will in process of time become so attuned to the higher vibration that in due course that vibration will become stable and will automatically throw off all that is lower and undesirable. Okay. Sorry. Yeah. So this is kind of a non-violent way of proceeding. We're not proceeding through the misapplication of the will or through an overly intense and locking will. So let's see here. One, two. Right. All right. So this was a review of the dangers of inhibition and a corrective for that tendency. Leading to difficulties within the brain. Now let's look at atrophy. What do we mean by the dangers of atrophy? And DK has, you know, so much experience here, and we will take it up because we trust and it makes sense. What do we mean by the dangers of atrophy? Simply this: some natures are so polarized on the mental plane that they run the risk of breaking connection with the two lower vehicles. Maybe all of us had that tendency for a while, where born of the fact that the teaching seems to emphasize the preeminence of mind. And certainly certain rays tend towards this. In some ways, you know, we're told people on the third and fifth ray have an easier time with the second initiation because they are not not emotionally focused. But it can go too far, and it stops the magical process. We can think it, but if we don't desire it enthusiastically, and if we don't take the necessary etheric physical steps, well, then the thought form detected and created by the soul for magical manifestation won't get through. These lower bodies exist for purposes of contact, for the apprehension of knowledge on the lower planes, and for reasons of experience, in order that the content of the causal body may be increased. So we cannot negate their value. And it is a stage to negate their value. Once a certain amount of mental focus is achieved, its high desirability is recognized, and maybe for some lives one is focused there, and there is atrophy of the lower vehicles. Therefore, it will be apparent to you that if the indwelling consciousness comes no lower than the mental plane and neglects the body of emotions and the dense physical, two things will result. Okay, what will result? We can only imagine. The lower vehicles will be neglected and useless and fail in their purposes, atrophying and dying from the point of view of the ego, whilst the causal body itself will not be built as desired, and so time will be lost. Okay. I guess all of us can detect whether we have gone through such stages. I know I did. And I think, I came in with a very strong mental tendency, and however, somewhere from the past, this ability to be an opera director was resurrected. And it put me directly in touch with emotion of the strongest kind. So perhaps to create a balance, lest the mentality become excessive. Maybe we all can find out where we stand in relation to that, especially students of the Tibetan. You know, it's a very mental teaching in a way. It's more than that, of course, much more than that, but it certainly requires the mind, and people can get trapped in it. And because we don't always do so well with that entrapment, sometimes the students of Alice Bailey have a reputation for being so mental to the exclusion of other necessary qualities. And what else happens? The mental body will be rendered useless likewise, and will become a thing of conscious, selfish content, and of no use in the world, and of little value. Sounds dangerous too, you know. It sounds a bit like the left-hand path. A thing of conscious, selfish content, the creating of a separate 13th sphere among the creative hierarchies is a great disaster. And, we wonder whether for such people the normal emotional response is atrophying. A dreamer whose dreams never materialize, a builder who stores up material which he never employs, a visionary whose visions are of no use to gods or men, well, at least, if not to men, at least to gods, let us hope, is a clog upon the system universal, and he is in great danger of atrophying. Let's just say, of being quite practically useless. That is the danger. No matter how satisfying may be the mental inquiry, Inquiry. Okay. So it makes us think of futility, doesn't it? And one does not want to be futile. Certainly not. A dreamer whose dreams never materialize, a builder who stores up material which he never employs. You know the old saying, I've said it many times, even a donkey can carry a library on his back. A visionary whose visions are of no use to gods or men is a clog upon the system universal. Okay, rather, we wish to promote the divine circulatory flow. Okay, well, I can see that as I sometimes do, let's see, divine circulatory flow. Divine circulatory flow. Let's see if I can do that. Divine circulatory flow. That is what we really try to achieve in the Aquarian Well, apparently I have that already in place. Meditation should have the effect of bringing all three bodies under more completely under control, under the control of the ego, and lead to the coordination, to a coordination and an alignment, to a rounding out and a symmetrical development that will make a man of real use to the great ones. All right, that is the desirable state. When a man realizes that mayhap, perhaps, he is too much centralized on the mental plane, he should definitely aim at making all his mental experiences, aspirations, and endeavors matters of fact on the physical plane. I guess I'm going to have to make this there are also mental aspirations, and somehow I'm just not succeeding in getting that the way it should be. All right. So there are also mental aspirations. I think he deals with those. Well, aspirational idealism he does deal with under the Taurus. And endeavors, if he has, he must make them matters of fact on the physical plane, bringing the two lower vehicles under control of the mental and making them the instruments of his mental creations and activities. Yes. So this is the corrective. Okay. This. It's so strange. I seem not to be able to. Get this the way it should be. Hopefully. Okay, so let's see. This is the corrective for too much mental focus. You know, leaving out essential aspects of our nature. All right. I have indicated two of the dangers most frequently met with, and I advise all students of occultism to remember that all the three bodies are of equal importance in carrying out the work to be done, both from the egoic standpoint and from the standpoint of service to the race. Let them aim at a wise coordination in expression that will enable the God within to manifest for the aiding of the world. We are being given such very sound advice. All three bodies are of equal importance in carrying out the work to be done. Okay. And it's hard for us to achieve balance. We always have favorite functions. Look at, you know, some people are right-handed, left-handed. They could maybe develop ambidexterity, but they don't. They continue to use the hand of preference. And when you look at Carl Jung, and he had his fourfold typology of human beings, they were intuitive, feeling, sensation-oriented, or thinking, putting them sort of at the cardinal points of the circle. So there were superior functions and inferior functions, and so often, the person would just continue to use the superior function and fail to cultivate something quite missing in their nature. The thinkers would be relatively devoid of feeling, the intuitive types devoid of sensation or vice versa, the feeling types devoid of thinking. Did I say that? The thinking types devoid of feeling. You know, the opposite side of the stick was not cultivated. So we're on page 98 now, maybe about a third of the way through the book, but not quite. And I think it's a good place to stop. We're, you know, just about a little more than an hour into it. And that makes up a digestible program. All I have to do is find the place where it starts, you know. And I think I can find that somehow. There we go. So this took us from 92 to 98. Okay, and I know this has to be tedious, but, and maybe, you know, you don't need to be here for this, but this is the end of program 25, just to get ourselves oriented. Today is the 25th of August. We're not sure exactly when the next program will be, maybe even tonight, you never know. And we're going to go to from page 98 onward. And we're studying basically, let's just say, whoopsie, that's not what I want. That we continue to study the dangers involved in meditation. And so far, inhibition and atrophy. Pause for a moment in the balance of your psychic makeup or your subtle bodies and your physical body. Do you find that either of these two has held sway or is holding sway? And if you do, the corrective has been offered. So we know what we can do to make the situation better. And then we'll go on to the next letter, and we begin with something about the emotional body. Okay. All right, lots of love, many blessings, and thank you for studying this with me. It's a wonderful book, and it gives so many of the foundational, wise foundational details concerning how best to pursue occult meditation, spiritually occult meditation. This is what we are pursuing, lest people, you know, accuse us of that, that sort of dark application of facts for selfish purposes. We're not into that. We're into service through meditation and study. Alrighty. We'll see you soon, and bye for now.